Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for this next hour, they're going to be your views out there. Certainly, we didn't do a program on Christmas Eve, and so this is Open Line Friday. And if you're out there, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. But certainly we've been hearing for the last few days, well, really going back a couple of weeks until since the attack on Mumbai, that the possibility of a war between India and Pakistan. And here this evening we're hearing about movement of Pakistani troops down to the border with India. India has complained that Pakistani flew one of its fighter planes, Indian airspace, India is mobilizing some of its forces for the possibility of a war with Pakistan. And of course this really all gets around or has to get back to the attack on the Taj Mahal Hotel there in Mumbai. Used to be Bombay. I prefer calling it Bombay, but it's in Mumbai now at the present time. But anyway, if you go into the background of this, of course, the attack, supposedly, there were only 10 people. Do you really believe that 10 terrorists killed a couple of hundred people and nine of them were killed and only one survived? Certainly, it wasn't just an attack on one area. It was an attack on several areas, and I don't think we've gotten the entire story right, but the one thing we have heard is, that the surviving terrorist admitted that he was trained in Pakistan and that had been trained for a good long while. They spent a lot of money training them. They'd gone to several training camps. They were indoctrinated in this radical form of Islam. And, of course, they really believed that when they died, they would go off to heaven with all the virgins that were going to be there waiting for them. And so they all intended to die on this attack. But they were in contact with people in a terrorist group in Pakistan that has very close ties to the Pakistani intelligence. So it would appear then that Pakistan was behind the attack on the Taj Mahal hotel. The only trouble with this, if you really begin looking behind the scenes and you know anything about what's going on, is that the Pakistani ISI, the Pakistani Intelligence Agency, which we're told, oh, they're independent of the military, you know, the military can't control them. Well, I'll tell you, of course you can control them. You just cut off their funds, and you make it illegal for them to do things that are illegal, and that's the end of this rogue organization. But that's really not true. The ISI has always been an extension of the American CIA. Not only that, but the American CIA had close ties into the Indian Intelligence Agency and to other intelligence agencies throughout the world. And they do this because they have massive amounts of money. There's a black budget that is not appropriated by Congress. And you want to get into, who's making all the money off the drug trade? And how can it be that when the Taliban controlled Afghanistan, there was very little heroin that was being produced, and once the Americans got there, why, of course, they're making far more heroin and opium than they ever did before. How can the Taliban do so much better job than we do? And the truth of the matter is, the CIA is the largest drug dealer in the world today. Not all elements of the CIA, but there is an element there, a dark element within the CIA, and it's vitally important that people begin to understand nothing as it appears to be. So the CIA has a black budget, and of course they fund intelligence agencies throughout the world, and I think that, of course, this whole thing in India is being set up, and I fear it's being set up to bring about a nuclear war. And that brings us to the Sybil Edmonds story, but we'll have to tell that later. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Right now we have John calling us from Vancouver, Canada. So let's go to John. John, are you? John, hi. How are you tonight?
Doing better. The snow's turning to rain.
All right, fine. Well, Vancouver, are you there on the island?
Oh, I'm not that far from the island.
All right, fine.
It's Travolta's territory. He lives out there on the by. He bought an island there by the Vancouver Island.
Okay, fine. Well, anyway, Chris, do you have a question or comment this evening?
Yeah. Well, my question centers around the legal precedent that's pulling away from the Constitution, where we were afforded, religious right to religious freedom. And I heard. Now I'm going through a bit of a battle myself. I heard that there was a woman in Florida got fired for saying Merry Christmas. Another man got fired for saying God bless you. And then the guy that took his children out of the in California out of the school, he got thrown in jail. And I'm going through a similar thing. I went to a hospital to pray for people, and the hospital there in Northwest Washington, they charged me with trespassing. So I got to go to court now.
No, I'm sorry. Are you in Vancouver, British Columbia, or Vancouver, Canada?
Oh, Vancouver, British Columbia.
All right, fine. So, but you went to a hospital there in Washington, the state of Washington, to pray for people, and they threw you out. Well, because unfortunately, this is the America we live in today, where you have freedom of religion, but don't ever tell anybody, of course, what you believe. And don't share your faith with other people. This is, of course, the problem we have today. But you have to understand, John, that there is a conspiracy against God. There are people in key positions who hate Christianity, and that's why they took God out of our schools and the prayer out of our schools and the Ten Commandments out of our schools. And they've done away with nativity scenes and Christmas pageants. It's because these powerful and wicked people, and, of course, many of them were in the Supreme Court, hate Christianity and are doing everything they can to undermine and destroy it.
To legislate it out of existence, to get God, to legislate God, totally out of the Constitution, and even with the Christmas tree deal where the court said that, yeah, you hide it in the back somewhere, don't have it where it's visible, and where Santa Claus, and here's the ridiculous part, if Santa Claus can get thrown in jail for saying ho, 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 I mean, what are we, degraded down to as a nation? I mean, it's insanity.
Well, we live in a world gone mad. There are only a few of us are sane, and a lot of people think we're crazy, but we really understand what's going on, and our job is to let people understand that there is a conspiracy against God. Hang on, we'll be right back in a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we have this on the line from Canada, John, just talking about the fact that he is a Christian, wanted to go to pray for people in the state of Washington, went to the hospitals, and of course was thrown out of the hospitals, wasn't allowed to pray for people. And yet, of course, you said these many times the Word of God can do far more good than the needles of physicians. And I know because I was a physician for many years. And in any circumstances, if you're out there in the listening audience, would like to talk about the attack on Christianity, which is so carefully and skillfully being coordinated today. And, of course, you watch television. Remember, a few years ago, we used to have all sorts of wonderful Christmas programs on television. And then every year there were a few less and less and less, and now there are almost no good Christian programs there. In fact, many of our stores, why the clerks are not allowed to say Merry Christmas. They can say Happy Holiday Season, but not the Merry Christmas, because many of the people who control our great industries and who control our great department stores and department store chains hate Christianity. And when you understand that, so much of what's going on makes sense. Go ahead, John.
Well, I think there's some other things that they're doing to try to get God out of the country. One of the other things is that we used to say, "In God we trust," on the dollar coin, and they took that out from the face of the coin and they put it on the serrated edge of the coin where you can barely see it.
Well, that's because you can barely see it. Yes, little bit by little bit, they're trying to take any mention of God away from the people, because, of course, people who believe in God cannot readily be enslaved. Those, of course, who believe in nothing will accept the tyranny of government. And the ultimate plan, as you know, is the establishment of this one-world government, a one-world religion, installing or enthroning a new one-world leader.
Yeah, absolutely. Can I ask your opinion, Dr. Sant?
Sure.
This new law that says you cannot homeschool your kids in California, what do you stand on that?
Well, I don't know that it is actually a law. We haven't really run into that. I think there are people that like to stop homeschooling, but it is not being implemented. I think it's wrong. I think that homeschooling is so important. Certainly God gave children to their parents, not to the state. And, of course, what these people who want to do away with homeschooling want is the ability to control the heart and the mind and the soul of the children and destroy their faith in Christianity. And you could go to a public school, they're going to teach that the Bible isn't true, that evolution is right, there is no such thing as creation. You're not allowed to talk about God. And in fact, there was a wonderful little cartoon somebody sent me on the email, and there's three little boys sitting out in the front of the principal's office, and the first little boy said, "I'm here because I said the S word." And the second little boy said, "I'm here because I said the F word." And the third little boy said, "I'm here because I said Christmas."
Oh.
And I thought that this was so apropos of what's going on today. Once again, let us get our telephone number out. It's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. But right now, John, fortunately, they haven't begun to implement this law. Let's hope it is not implemented.
Well, it just as I said earlier, the gentleman heard the reason why he went to the school is because the book that they were giving his kids that said homosexuality is okay if you can have man with man and woman with woman. So he saw this literature and he had a fit. So he went down to school and he says, "I'm taking my kids out of this school." I hope I got my facts straight. Anyway, I hope the details are right. But he said, "I'm taking my kids out. And that's it. I'm taking them out. There's not bringing them back." And so the school called the police. The police came right away, put them in handcuffs, threw them in jail.
Now, I would have to actually see some mention of that. I haven't really read that any place, John. Maybe it did happen, but certainly anything is possible. I just haven't read about it.
Yeah.
But well,
I got a feeling it's going to be, you're going to read about it, and more as we get drawn to the closer to the day where the Lord's coming back. I think we're really the Antichrist spirit out there, like to remove God from, you know, I think it's really strong, and I think pretty soon the Constitution will not be a legal document. It's something that's practically laughed at now.
No, I think that's why we spend so much time trying to teach people about the Constitution and encourage people to actually put on courses to educate other people, because if we don't abide by the Constitution, then freedom as we know it will soon become simply a remembrance of things past. Anything else, John?
Nope. You go on and keep, that's why you're called Radio Liberty. And if we lose our liberties, that's it. We've lost it all. And that's what America was built on. The founding fathers were actually fleeing persecution themselves. That's what America was built on.
You're absolutely right. And, of course, that America was once the beacon of light for the world, but as things are going, that beacon is getting dimmer and dimmer.
That's right.
God bless. Thanks very much for calling. Okay, fine. Well, let's go to Tom, who's calling from New York. And, of course, our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, and it's Open Line Friday. Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Fine, Dr. Stan.
What part of New York is calling from?
Windham.
Okay, very good. Is that upstate New York someplace?
Up in the Catskill Mountains.
Okay, very good. Well, do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I had a comment, and I'd be very interested to hear you reply with a comment. I'm from a long family of teachers. I'm talking going back to my great-grandparents going to Temple University and being a teacher, et cetera, et cetera. All the gigantic extended family of teachers. I taught in Paris for 6 years. I taught English as a second language, and then about 7 years of teaching in high school. I taught French and Spanish, and of course I grew up in the American school system. When I was a child, there were certain things I didn't like about school, but I certainly didn't totally hate it and totally detest it. Whereas, as of about 10 years ago, I did a little bit of substitute teaching in grade school. Now, I hate to tell you, Dr. Stan, if I were to bring a child into the world today, I'm 51 now, but if I were, I would never allow that child near any public school ever for any reason whatsoever.
Well, isn't that tragic? Because I can remember when I went to public school, you know, 65 years ago, more than that, actually, probably closer to 70 years ago, we had wonderful teachers, and but that education is no longer available. People have to understand there's an organized effort to create disruption in our classes, to destroy discipline and to destroy the love it, which every child should have for our Lord and to have for their family and to have for our country. They've done a great job of it. And we got an awful lot of confused young people, and we wonder why so many young people are into drugs, into sex, and into violence.
Yes, I mean, I don't mean to suggest a direction for the show, but I would be very interested to hear myself what goes on in grade schools today, because as of 10 years ago, the stuff that made me shudder is actually minor. There was, for example, lunchtime detention where the bad boy had to stand against the wall while the entire rest of, 100 kids at lunch sit there and they get to look at him. There's the teacher's assistant. Oh, that's a brilliant idea. These teacher's assistants, good God. The teacher's assistant who, between lessons, now, when I went to school, between lessons was bedlam, and I had old battle axes when I was a child, all right? Each woman had her style. I think my grandmother, who was a fifth grade teacher, would slap a ruler against her hand. There were other teachers who would clap their hands. There were some teachers who would just stand in a certain place with a certain position. That's all you needed. And everybody calmed down, and you went on to your next lesson. Oh, no. No, no, no. As of 10 years ago? No, 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 no. Now, between lessons, we have to have a teacher's assistant who goes around going, shh, shh, shh. You have to be quiet the whole time. Can't make noise. I mean, to me, I find that kind of thing, with all the things that they could have had that teacher's assistant doing, helping kids, they got her going around shushing the children, for the love of God.
Well, of course, there's little wonder when our children graduate from high school and they're tested competitively with students from other countries. Our kids can't compete, but it didn't happen by accident. It's all happening by intent. And I share your concern, Tom, and if everybody's out there in the listening audience would like to share anything with us, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Anything else you want to say before we let you go, Tom? Anything else you want to say? Well, I guess we lost Tom, so we're going to go over here to Valerie. Let's see if we can get Valerie to pick up here. Okay, hi, Valerie. How are you? Up in Spokane, Washington. I understand you're having a snowstorm there.
Oh, boy, are we ever.
Why don't you just give Al Gore a call and ask him how that could be happening when we got global warming?
Well, it's very fortuitous, I guess, that I was on the phone and I've never called before, but regarding your last caller and the caller previous, I've actually heard of a case where the father was arrested, but I believe that was in Massachusetts.
All right, Ryan, I hadn't heard of it in California. I wouldn't be, nothing would surprise me at all, but
no.
I just hadn't heard of that specific case. And anyway, we have real problems when, of course, children are really wards of the state, and this whole attitude that the government can tell you how you're going to educate your child, this is a terrible, terrible precedent, and what we've got to do is get back, cut back on government. In fact, Cicero talked about, when 25 years before Christ was born in Bethlehem, he said, the budget should be balanced, and the excesses of the bureaucracy, arrogance of the bureaucracy should be tempered. I mean, they saw it then. Nothing's changed very much since that time.
No, I have 5 children, and so from when I went through school and then home teaching mine briefly and then having them in the public school now, It's a horrendous education.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Valerie, go right ahead. So your children are in public education now?
Yes, they are.
All right, fine.
So I have 3 in high school and 2 in...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com.
And you know, with all the other students against them and one child professing and, you know, confessing their faith in our Lord and Savior. But they've got to learn to be strong, and who knows what impact they will have on the other children. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 right here in the Central Coast of California. You have anything you'd like to talk about, why, this is the time. It's open line. Well, today it's Open Line Friday, but since we missed Open Line Wednesday, why, it's great to have an opportunity to talk to people. Anything else you wanted to cover, Valerie? Because I think I share your concern. I just wish that there was something that we could do to help. Unfortunately, you know, private schools or even Christian schools are so expensive today. And it became, your major thing is you've got to keep a roof over their heads and certainly giving them enough to eat if you're the sole source of support.
Yes, I am. But no, nothing further, just to say God bless you and the work that you're doing.
Thank you so very much, Valerie. God bless. And let's go to Krista Daniel, who's calling from Spokane, Washington. Hi, Daniel. How are you doing?
I am well, Dr. Stan. How are you?
Doing just great.
Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas to you.
Well, I just want to say I had been ringing a bell for the Salvation Army for a month. And I was saying Merry Christmas. And some people would come up to me and say, well, I don't believe in Merry Christmas. Can you just say Happy Holidays? So what I was trying to do is inform people that the reason, one of the reasons why Christmas is a national holiday is because this nation was created as a Christian nation. And I told everybody this, you know, everyone who would come around me who wanted to listen, I'd ring my bell and say, you know, this is a Christian nation. Out of most of the people that I talked to, maybe I think three couples actually stopped and said, you know, we know that. And I asked them, I go, so why aren't we being taught this? And they had no answer.
Well, of course, if they listened to our programs, they would understand that there is a conscious effort to destroy the faith of our people, to destroy the Christian foundation of this country, because, you know, where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty, but you take away that Spirit and soon there will be tyranny. And but I admire you for having the courage to say Merry Christmas, and after all, the reason that you're there is for to try to raise funds for the Salvation Army. That does a wonderful job, but Jesus Christ is the reason for the season. And anybody who thinks that we have Christmas, and of course this is not a Christian nation, doesn't know anything about our history.
That's right. And you know, just one thing. I've been all over the country. I've been to the Library of Congress. I've been studying for many years under the things that you talk about. And I try my best, Dr. Stan, but sometimes I feel like I'm hitting a brick wall, man.
Well, I'll tell you what. I've been at this for 46 years. I may have been at it a little longer than you have. I don't know how old you are. But I will tell you that I'm more optimistic than ever before because people are beginning to hurt. People are beginning to face losing their jobs. People have lost half of the money they had invested in the stock market if they were foolish enough to be invested in the stock market. And as times get worse, people are going to look for answers, and you and our other listeners have to be there to come up with the answers and try to get them to think about what's going on. Why do you think they took God and prayer out of our schools? There's nothing in the Constitution that justifies it. Why did the Supreme Court take God and prayer out of our schools? Very simply, because these people were Masons, and they were sent there, they were put there to destroy the Christian foundation of this country. Look it up on the Internet. All you have to do is type in Mason Supreme Court. You'll find out that the Masons control the Supreme Court in majorities of 5-4 to 8-1 during those years between 1941 and 1971. People have never heard that before. Try to get them to look on the back of the dollar bill and the occult symbology there, and there's going to be a wonderful new video we're going to have, or DVD, just in about 3 weeks from Chris Pinto, called The Eye of the Phoenix. It goes into the symbology in the back of the dollar bill. Point out that they hide their emblems in plain sight, and that they did any research that began to understand that there are all these occult emblems, certainly not only in our currency, they're all over Washington, D.C. You know, they can put the signs of the zodiac, paint them on every floor of the Dirksen building, but we can't have a cross displayed. Why is it all right to have the signs of the zodiac, which are used by astrologers and fortune tellers? Don't get discouraged. I mean, we have the greatest opportunity of our lifetime to begin to influence people. We're going to have to do it one at a time, but we are an army, and I hope we're on God's side. Hang on, we'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our telephone number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. We have Daniel from Spokane. Daniel, don't get discouraged. Believe me, there is much to be thankful for, and certainly we've had a wonderful time in a wonderful country. But the battle is not over until, you know, what they say, the fat lady sings, and we have an opportunity right now to reach the public, and the other side, believe me, are worried. They're afraid the American people just might wake up. We shouldn't then feel that they're wrong, that because we should agree with them. The American people may wake up, and whether we succeed or fail is up to us, not to them.
Right. You know, well, you were talking about the occult symbols on the dollar bill, and I've showed people many times the little owl up in the corner. And people look at me and they go, oh, I don't know about that. And, you know, so I talk to them about that and the Bohemian Grove and all these other things. And so I'm trying to keep confidence. And I believe in you, man. And I believe in your show and I believe in all these other shows. And I'm really thankful that you're out there. And I'm thankful for the other people who are out there calling in and doing their best. You know, I thank everybody.
Well, God bless. And you can always point out the sixes. There are three sixes on the right side of the back of the dollar bill. Two of them headed one way and one of them headed the other. There are all sorts of symbology there. And the triangle with the eye, the glorified eye, and it is an emblem of the ancient mystery religions. And it's been around for 5,000 years. What's it doing on the back of the dollar bill? And they'll have all sorts of explanations, but if they check it out, they'll find out they've been lied to. And once you convince people they've been lied to, then they're going to leave you. Don't get discouraged. Don't try to show them the owl. It's pretty hard to see. It's no question it's there. But the important thing is simply the pyramid. What's a pyramid doing on the back of the dollar bill? It's also an emblem of the ancient mystery religions. And everything, of course, is pointing towards the goal of the mystery religions was the establishment of world government. Listen to what Henry Kissinger is saying. Within the last week, he's talked about bringing about a one world order. And, of course, as a means of addressing the financial crisis, point out that this whole thing has been created. And, you know, that there's a conscious effort to destroy everything they've worked for, at least get their interest. And then, of course, get them to listen to our program. They may start out thinking we're crazy, but before long, they'll be afraid we're not. So, Daniel, just hang in there. Remember, you're not alone.
Hey, one more thing. You know, the other day I was listening, I don't know what to, but I heard something about...
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We've got Daniel calling from Spokane. One last thought, Daniel. Go ahead.
I think I heard it on... MSM or NSNBC or something, that they said that sometime in this new coming year that a new global religious leader was going to come out and try to change everybody's mind to create a one world religion.
Oh, that was on December 12th, and it was actually in the Wall Street Journal, their internet site, and we actually have a copy of that. And that's absolutely right. They announced the coming of the Maitreya, the world leader, who is the world leader that every religion is looking for. I don't know whether it's, why would the Wall Street Journal put something like that out? Right? Because the Wall Street Journal is controlled by the occult. Anybody would like to see a copy of that article, we do have it available. You can probably find it up on the internet by Googling in and, or perhaps even going to ask.com, because Google sometimes suppresses these things. Ask.com and Google in Constance Cumby, Wall Street Journal, Maitreya. M-A-Y-T-R-E-A. Check out the spelling of Maitreya, but that's M-Y-T-R-E-A. Anyway, of course, it's up there, and if you can't find it, why, we'll be glad to send you a copy. Yeah, exciting times we live in, Daniel. God bless you, and remember, you know, if we're on God's side, we're far stronger than the other side.
Well, thank you very much, and God bless everyone. Be well.
And you too. Bye-bye. And you keep saying Merry Christmas. Let's go to Dave calling from Illinois. Hi, Dave. How are you doing?
Merry Christmas, Dr. Stan.
And you too.
A few comments here. Been listening. Good program. The homeschooling is great, and what's happening in the schools is disgusting. Although I've been out of school for 30 years, I know, I've heard what's going on in those places. But You know, there. I saw a video the other day. My brother sent me a DVD from California about the psych industry and the psych drugs. You know, Ritalin, Prozac, and it's just what's happening there is so incredibly criminal. It's genocide is what it is. It's mass murder is what it is. Anyway, you add that fact they're destroying a generation with these psych drugs. Plus, they're dumbing them down in the schools. You know, and add to that the fact that Dr. Stan, with globalism, we're losing a good paying job. So. You project 15, 20 years on the road, what kind of country are we going to have? I mean, the kids they're not going to be able to find good jobs. They're going to be dumb as a box of rocks, although they're going to feel good about it. And half of them are going to be zombies of Prozac. So, I mean, you know, it is a bleak picture. And we have a lot of work ahead of us. And I'm not sure we can win, but these are very daunting problems, Dr. Stan.
No question at all, but you see, it's a spiritual battle. What we've got to do is turn people's hearts back to God. The only way we're going to do it is to let them realize that everything they own, everything they possess, even their freedom is under attack today. And when people know there's a problem, they're going to look for a solution. And they're not going to find it in politics, although we should be involved in politics. And they're not going to find it in philosophy, although we should be involved in the philosophical battle. They're going to find it by turning their lives over to the Lord. And when enough people do that, why, we'll reach a crescendo, reach a tipping point, and hopefully why things are going to change. But our job is to get people educated and turn them back to God. So, I mean, the outlook looks bleak, but remember, of course, things are going to get a lot worse before they get better.
Well, Dr. Stan, the way I look at it, I have a theory about the American people. Sometimes I call them sheep, but I just can't help it. I think the average American has been so comfortable the entire lifetime that they never had a bad day. And I think the average American, yeah, they know politics is corrupt, they know they're a bunch of crooks and all that, but I think the average person just thinks their life will never change, no matter how corrupt things get. Their life won't change, and of course we know it's going to. And I think our only hope really is if things do get as bad as I think they're going to get in the next few years, will they wake up? I don't know. Some people say they still won't wake up.
Well, our job is to be out there telling them, and of course we can't determine whether they're going to wake up or not, but we're going to have the greatest opportunity we've ever had to reach people in the coming months and years, because we're moving into terrible, terrible times. And I think people are going to want to know the answers, and we've got to be there for them. For the first time, they're going to be willing to listen, because they're going to be jarred out of their affluent state. So look at it from the good point of view, okay?
Yeah. Well, I just look around me here in the town I live in. The average person just seems to have absolutely no clue. They are so clueless.
Well, of course.
Unfortunately, the buku doesn't talk about it. They never say a word about it, you know. And so they're so controlled. And anyway, it is hard to be optimistic, because I see how screwy things are and how right now the enemy is winning. And, you know, so it's hard to keep your chin up, but I do try to.
Well, at least we've got a voice. And so don't get discouraged. We've got a lot to be thankful for. And really, we should be even more thankful as things get worse and worse, because that's our time to reach the people. Good night, David. And don't get discouraged. God bless. Okay, fine. Well, our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And let's go to Paul, who's calling from Oklahoma. Hi, Paul. What part of Oklahoma are you calling from?
The Tulsa area.
Okay, fine. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes, I just wanted to ask you a question. And first, I wanted to say a comment recently on the radio. They've been talking about a poll that was given asking people about the three branches of government, and they said most of the people that were in the government did the worst, and of course the people didn't know the three branches of government, so I asked my girlfriend, and she said the Pentagon.
Well, you'd got to spend a little time getting her educated.
Yeah. My question, though, is that they said that they had low Christmas sales, and I was wondering, how will that affect the economy in 2009? Because I know Christmas sales is a big part of the American economy, and they said that they were really low this year, and that they've had sales down in major stores marked down off, some of them 60% or more.
Well, I think that, Chris, there's going to be some great sales. I mean, I saw some sales that looked so good. I was even thinking of going out and buying some things I didn't need because it was such a great bargain. Yeah. But yeah, the thing is that, Chris, I think we're going to see a lot of stores closing down, a lot of the chains closing down. If you look at my November newsletter, we posted it up. It should be posted on the Internet. That's the RadioLiberty.com and the letter. We listed all the stores that have closed, but so many of them are closing their stores. Major chains are closing their stores after the holidays, hoping, of course, that there were going to be good sales. But I think that what's going to happen, of course, a lot of stores are going to close. A lot of businesses are going to close. A lot of people are going to be laid off work. And, of course, we're going to be looking at 10, 15 million people unemployed here, you know, probably within the year. And, of course, then this is going to impact upon this local and state incomes. And, of course, the state and local government are going to have to cut back on services and lay people off. And it starts a cascading effect. But this is, of course, what you'd expect in a severe recession. I think we're going into a depression. I think it is all engineered. They know exactly what they're doing. They are doing everything wrong. And, of course, eventually, of course, they're going to destroy the value of our currency and impoverish our people. What we need to do is tell people what lies ahead. And right now, of course, they're massively increasing the monetary base. The monetary base, which is really primarily the currency in circulation, increased from about $880 billion up to $1.38 billion in a matter of 3 months. If you were to extend that over a year, it would be almost doubling the monetary base, but in this instance, it's up just about, 33%, something like that. This is highly inflationary. You can't do that. This is the sort of thing they're doing in Zimbabwe today. But there, of course, the inflation rate is about 200 and, well, the last thing I heard was 238 million percent a year. 238 million percent a year. That's the government that the United States State Department installed in that country. I think they're going to destroy the value of our currency. I think they're going to impoverish our people. But, Paul, our job is to tell people what lies ahead and try to get them to think. And as these things come to pass, they're going to remember what you told them. They're intentionally promoting inflation. Right now we're in a deflationary spiral. How long it'll last, I don't know. But there's no way they're going to be able to pull all that money out of circulation, and it's going to end up destroying our currency. They could have solved this problem a long time ago. They do not want to. Why? Well, of course, the explanation is, when you say, well, why would rational people want to destroy our nation? It's because we're not dealing with rational people. We're dealing with people who have a different worldview because they worship a different God. And they really want to destroy America and bring about this world government. That's what it's all about.
Can I make two other points? Recently I saw, I haven't read the book, but I saw an ad for a book that said that something like one out of every 25 people has no conscience and are sociopaths. And the other point I wanted you to speak on was the fact that Barney Frank, I think it was just last weekend, finally admitted that he was a homosexual when in the Franken cover-up, and also Paul Bernanke admitted to it, of course, years and years ago, said that he was a homosexual when he just now admitted last weekend. And I'll take your answers off the air so I can hear it.
All right, fine. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And we'll get to D in Post Falls, Idaho in just a moment. But the gentleman calling, Sydney, said that Barney Frank had just admitted he was homosexual. No, Barney Frank admitted a long time ago he was a homosexual. And he lives with his homosexual lover. It came out some years ago that his homosexual lover was running a prostitution ring, a homosexual prostitution ring, out of Barney Frank's home. Not only that, but this fellow who was running the prostitution ring was actually running people through the White House after hours. In the evening hours, you could take a tour of the White House with this homosexual prostitute and get paid for it, of course. Well, of course, Barney Frank said, oh, shucks, I had no idea what was happening. I had no idea this was happening. And, well, of course, he knew exactly what was happening. I mean, Barney Frank is a very intelligent man. After all, he's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He's one of the primary architects of what's going on today because he hates America. And, of course, he was the one who wrote the legislation, the so-called TARP legislation, the Troubled Asset, T-A-R, anyway, the Troubled Asset program of funding, the $700 billion. He wrote this 145-page, 142-page document, and he just forgot to put in there that, you know, that the money had to be used, of course, to buy up home loans to stop this whole cascade of falling home prices. And he actually, in this legislation, gave his good friend, Henry Paulson, the Secretary of the Treasury, who's also a member of the Council on Foreign Relations and regularly attends Bilderberger meetings, Barney Frank, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, gave Henry Paulson, member of the Council on Foreign Relations and a frequent visitor, a member, frequent a guest at the Bilderberger Group, he gave him total immunity for what he would do with the $700 billion. Now, you would think if you're going to give somebody $700 billion, you'd stipulate that the money was to be used for buying up housing loans and stop the cascading fall of home prices. But Barney Frank didn't do that. And, of course, he stipulated that no measures could ever be taken against Henry Paulson, even if he stole the money or if he turned around and gave it to his friends on Wall Street, which he did do. And when Leslie Stahl on the 60 Minutes about 2 weeks ago asked Barney Frank why he didn't put a stipulation in this legislation that gave Henry Paulson, a fellow member of the Council on Foreign Relations, $700 billion, Barney Frank's response was, you can't make people do things. You can't make people do things. Ladies and gentlemen, that's what laws are all about. I mean, he knew exactly what he was doing. This whole thing is contrived. Anyway, I hope that answers the question for our caller from Oklahoma. Let's go to Dee in Post Falls, Idaho. And again, our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But it's amazing how many of the corrupt and evil and degenerate people in Washington, D.C. and throughout our nation happen to be members of the Council on Foreign Relations, which is a front for a secret society that was established in 1921 to create a world government. And you'll find that reference on page 952 of Professor Carol Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. Hey, Dee, how are you doing?
Well, I'm blessed to be a Jesus-following, Bible-believing Christian, but it certainly is very challenging economic times, isn't it?
It certainly is, and we're in for very difficult times, Dee, and I hope that you just, you know, certainly get yourself in the best position you can just to ride out what lies ahead. Don't get yourself in debt under any circumstances.
Well, I'm already a little there. I'm on thin ice and then deep snow, but we'll talk to you later about that.
All right, fine.
Anyway, I can't believe this is the first. I'm calling a radio talk show opposing a tax cut. Generally speaking, I think tax cutting is always a good idea because, you know, you have less taxes and you have more freedom. But we also have to follow the rule of law and the Constitution. And without that, you don't have a country. And the thing that's bugging me tonight, Dr. Stan, is this well-intentioned but completely unconstitutional idea of a national sales tax holiday. It flies completely in the face of the Tenth Amendment. What do you think?
Well, of course, basically the sales tax, these are state taxes, and the federal government should have nothing to do with it. We have
exactly to
abide by the Constitution. So you're really supporting the Constitution when you say that.
Yeah. Well, it would really fly if we had a national sales tax, and I pray we never do, at least without a simultaneous repeal of the income tax, number 16. But I would just ask, by what perverted legal theory do the feds think that they have a legal right to interfere in a state function?
Well, gee, by actually take away the state sales tax from the state, they're plunging our states into even more of a problem. Could you imagine what will happen in California? We're already facing a deficit of $40 billion by the year 2010 if they were to take away the sales tax for a few weeks or a few months. I mean, they would really plunge us into chaos, and this may very well be what they intend to do. But I think you're entirely right. It is not a function of the federal government to have anything to do with the state or their income. So I think this is, we've got a lot of people in Washington, D.C. who have sworn to uphold a constitution they don't believe in. They're criminals. They ought to be impeached or arrested and sent to prison.
Yeah, and this whole business of unbridled consumption for economic stimulus is flawed in the first place. What we need is production and thrift. What about, what would be constitutional would be a federal income tax holiday. After all, income is a tax on productivity. Why don't we do that? That would be healthy economic stimulus.
I think that's a great idea. How about, if you want to keep those federal tax cuts, what we need to do is cut federal spending. Take away the money so they can't do so much damage, so they can't send our boys over to seas to fight in no-win wars, which is exactly what Iraq was, Afghanistan is. We're not trying to win the war in Afghanistan. We're funding the Pakistani that are funding the ISI, which is Pakistani intelligence, is funding the Taliban who are killing our boys. And, of course, we're going to leave our troops in Iraq. The whole plan is to leave them there indefinitely, but they can't tell the American people that. We're supposed to believe they're over there fighting for freedom. We're not. We carry a book called Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins and another book, The Secret of the American Empire, The Secret American Empire. People need to read that to understand what this is about. And then read Zygmunt Brzezinski's book entitled The Grand Chessboard, where he says, he who controls Central Asia controls the world. And that's what it's all about. It has nothing to do at all with preserving freedom. Well, did you have anything else you wanted to say, Dee, before we let you go?
Oh, just Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
And Merry Christmas. God bless you. And try to get those people up there in the Post Falls area to listen to our...
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Over the lives of the people. That's what it was all about. Limited government and liberty. And of course, it was based upon Christian concepts that only free, only people who believed in God, of course, could be free. And of course, I think James Madison said it best when he said, "Our Constitution was made for a moral and religious people who would not work for any other," which is why it was signed in the day of our Lord. And people say, "Oh, well, my goodness, that is just a figure of speech." And no, it wasn't. They understood it was the day of our Lord, dating back to the time of Jesus' birth. The French Revolution, a few years later, of course, dated their Constitution from that very day. It started, that was the beginning of a new era. That was not what our people wanted. They wanted to continue the Christian tradition here in America. Anything else you wanted to say before we let you go?
No, I think that's pretty plain. You like it the way it is, you wouldn't change it.
I wouldn't change it at all. Bye-bye, God bless. And let's go, this is the last call we're going to take. We've got George calling from Mississippi. George, quick question or statement, we're just out of time.
Yes, a question. They be advertising the Black Visa. Are you familiar with that, a Black Visa card?
No, I'm not. What's it about?
I don't know. Some kind of credit card they are advertising now. I was just wondering what kind of credit card was it, you know.
I have no knowledge at all about it, George. I can't help you. I'm sorry.
Okay, then. Thank you.
God bless. But I'll tell you what, if it's a credit card, don't get it. The last thing you want is to have a credit card, because then you're going to spend money you don't have. We all do. And credit cards are really a curse, and we'd be better off without them. God bless.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. In fact, if you read Edward Bellamy's book, Looking Backwards, written back in about 1881 or 1882, he was talking about credit cards. Now, whoever would have thought of a credit card at that time in our history? But you see, everything is planned. Now, there are people who have a knowledge of the future, and Edward Bellamy said in that book, Looking Backwards, a credit card will be just talking about what the life is going to be like in the year 2000. A credit card will be just as good in Europe as gold once was. All part of a long-range plan to bring us to where we are today. Well, this is, of course, the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And if you're out there in the listening audience and you believe in what we're doing, and you believe in our message, that we're involved in a spiritual battle being played out on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield, but it is primarily a spiritual battle, and there is a conspiracy against God, and that is the common denominator to everything. If you agree with that, and you'd like to help us, and you're in a position to, and I know a lot of people are not in a position to help now, and I fear it's going to get a lot worse before this is over. But anyway, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Let me suggest, to help you understand what's going on today from a prophetic point of view, Pastor Billy Crone's 10 DVD series. They come in two packets. The Final Countdown Part 1, The Final Countdown Part 2. They're wonderful entertainment, they're wonderful education, a wonderful way to point out to others what is happening today was prophesied thousands of years ago. How could that possibly have happened? Unless, of course, there is a plan and God is directing that plan. And then, of course, we have Pastor Crone's 10 DVD set on creation. We have his 4DV set on RFID, and it pretty, of course, shows that they are planning on monitoring and tracking everyone. We also have Catherine Albrecht's wonderful book, Spy Chips, and a 4-tape set on spy chips. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, there is a plan to monitor and control each and every one of the listening audience. You need to hear my talk on the planned police state. And I suggest a syllabus that goes with that, because it contains the information you need to understand what's going on today. And, of course, has information from the other side. And there is another side. There really are demonic beings out there. And, of course, we actually see their writings. The writings that were channeled to a woman named Alice Bailey. Our number 1-800-544-8927. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And for the next hour, they're the views of one of our favorite guests, William Grigg, former senior editor of the New American Magazine, and now certainly working with the Welch Foundation, writing, helping publish their, and monitor their blog, and doing a lot of radio. But we're privileged to have him here again with us this evening as we begin looking at what's going on in America. As America is changing, America is moving, in my estimation, into a period of chaos and crisis. And without further ado, William, thank you so very much for being with us.
Dr. Stan, it's always a joy to be with you. I need to take just a minute here in light of the fact that you do have a very large audience, and many people who are part of your audience have been very kind to me and to my family over the last year, last couple of years, actually. And I happen to be probably the world's single most inept individual when it comes to issuing thank you cards and making other gestures of appreciation of that sort, knowing that many of the people have been so generous to my family or part of your audience. I'd like to take this opportunity publicly to thank them and to assure them that in due time, as soon as I'm able to make the proper arrangements, I do want to thank them individually. But in light of the fact that we're speaking today after Christmas, and this is a period of time where people tend to be very mindful of the blessings that we've received, I just want to take a moment and publicly thank those who have been a blessing to my family, and to thank you as well for giving me access through your program to so many wonderful people. And I think that it reflects very well upon you and upon your program and also upon our country that there are so many people who, when given the opportunity, will be so generous to somebody they never met but with whom they feel a certain affinity. So I just wanted to take a little bit of time and express myself on that point this evening.
Well, I appreciate that, and certainly I know the people out there understand the terrible burden you have with five children, raising them, and certainly the amazing things that you have accomplished and will continue to accomplish. And so, anyway, of course, this is a very, very special time of year. It's a wonderful and joyous season, and people are trying to take away the joy of Christmas and our belief in Christmas, but it doesn't change it at all. This is a wonderful time of year to celebrate the birth of our Savior, and certainly I really appreciate so much your willingness to come on to our program just the day after Christmas over this very special time of the year. Go ahead.
Well, it's somewhat incongruous to be talking about things that are so ominous and unpleasant at this particular time of year in light of the fact that the promise of Christmas is that justice eventually will be done, and that justice will be tempered with mercy and grace to each of us individually. That seems like it might be a little bit inappropriate to talk about what's happening as our Constitution is reduced to a fine powder and what remains of our republic is turned into an outright military state. And we take a look at the prospects for next year in terms of the economy, and we know that what we've been dealing with over the last 6 or 8 weeks, the last 3 or 4 or 5 months, are merely a foretaste of really terrible things in the offing. It is a source of great comfort and happiness to know that the victory's already been won, and that ours is the duty to remain faithful in those things that we know are true. And inasmuch as we do so, there's simply no way that we can actually lose, that we may find ourselves called upon to face great adversity and great hardship and heartbreak, but ultimately the victory has been won. And so that's, of course, the greatest source of comfort. And I do take comfort as well in the justice of God, the fact that there are so many people who can with impunity do so many terrible things in the misplaced certitude that when they're dead, that's the end of it. And of course, that's not the case.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with William Grigg.
One of the people I think of when we talk about the astringency and the sterility of the secular worldview is John Maynard Keynes, so-called Lord Keynes, the individual who's probably the second most influential political and economic figure of the modern age. I think the most influential is Lenin. I think Keynes is the second most influential. Lenin showed how you can go about organizing power and exercising it in the interests of a small ruling oligarchy through various means. He was very adept at the cultivation of hatreds and the harvesting of political power through the manipulation of people into collective groups. And then Keynes, of course, is the dominant so-called economic theorist of our time, somebody who has preached many decades ago, this utterly asinine notion that you spend yourself rich as a society through central planning, as long as you have a group of central planners who are in charge of creating money out of nothing and spending huge amounts of it in appropriate measure and in timely and supposedly adept fashion, you can have a society grow rich through this process as opposed to producing things that are bought and sold in a free market. Keynes, of course, is the dominant spirit right now of the editorial staffs of the newspapers and, of course, of the economic elite surrounding Barack Obama as he prepares to take office. They're all talking about the idea that in order to bring about an economic recovery, what we need is a much, much larger dose of the same poison that's brought us to the precipice here. The idea that the government simply can stimulate the economy through the creation of huge amounts of so-called money and the public funding of infrastructure projects and building projects and anything else that can be conjured up by the mind of social planners. Keynes, his entire anti-philosophy, to be a philosopher is to be a lover of wisdom, of course. And so if you don't love wisdom, if you agitate against wisdom, you can't really be a philosopher. You could be an anti-philosopher. His entire anti-philosophy is built upon one sort of cast-off observation he made once when he was talking about the idea of time preference and economic calculation. He said, well, in the long run, we're all dead. And so it doesn't really matter what we do because eventually, of course, we're just deferring costs to future generations. That doesn't matter because we'll all be dead. I've actually heard, and I know that you've heard, Dr. Stan, most of your audience has heard, George W. Bush, who people mistakenly consider to be some kind of a Christian, actually talking about the decisions he made regarding committing our country unconstitutionally to the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, and being asked about how he will be viewed, and he said, well...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William is simply talking about our President George Bush when asked how he would be viewed in the future by future generations for unconstitutionally committing our men to war in the Middle East. And go right ahead, William.
Yeah, what he said was, well, history will have to make that judgment, and of course by that time I'll be long dead. And that, of course, is the same kind of a thing that Keynes was saying about economic calculations regarding the creation of huge burdens of debt that are passed on intergenerationally to our children or grandchildren and so forth. You know, in the long run, we're all dead. Well, the Christian perspective is that, no, in the long run, we're not all dead. We have judgment to worry about. There is a reality called the resurrection. And in the long run, we have to face our Maker, and we have to give an accounting for those things that we have done which are in violation of His laws and teachings. And, of course, if you're involved in a huge enterprise of theft, whether you're talking about theft in the active sense within the present generation or whether you're talking about stealing the resources that would be rightfully the property of those yet to be born, you're going to have to make an accounting regarding that theft to our Creator. And this brings us back to the whole concept of a lot of people don't understand how important this is, that socialism of the variety that we have been practicing here in the United States and for which we are now paying the price with the interest to come is based upon the transfer of wealth from the future. The idea that there would be wealth somehow accumulated at some unspecified time in the future adequate to pay the costs of our current model, our current economic model, we're actually making an intergenerational a plunder mechanism the motive engine of this economy.
In fact, I think what people really understand, we are running a gigantic Ponzi scheme here in the United States. We're very critical of Bernie Madoff for, you know, running a Ponzi scheme and stealing $50 billion, but he was a piker compared with what's going on in Washington, D.C., where, of course, we're getting the Social Security and Medicare funds in, which is supposed to be put aside for future generations, but we're not putting it aside. We're spending it today with the idea that down the line, of course, we'll get more money in. We can continue paying all the people who retire. The only trouble is that actuarially it's not sound, and we've run out of money in a relatively few years for Medicare and Social Security, and when that happens, all the people who paid in all of their life will end up just like the people who were victims of Bernie Madoff, you know, who knew exactly what he's doing, and the trouble is that the people in Washington, D.C. know they're running a Ponzi scheme, but we're not going to put them in jail.
Well, of course not. When it's done by somebody like Bernie Madoff, who's one of the really top-level elites of the elite in the investment world, somebody who's got a very, very deeply entrenched background of the upper echelons, the topmost echelons, the financial elite, when somebody like that does that as a matter of individual initiative, it's considered to be a crime. But when you do it under the aegis of a government agency, it's called policy, and we don't criminalize policy differences. That's one of the little truisms that are consistently thrown in our faces in the name of the sacred bipartisan consensus. No, we don't criminalize policy differences. Well, no, they're not policy differences. If they involve the conscious criminal fraud that something like a Social Security or other welfare transfer payment of the type you're describing involves, then no, they're crimes. I mean, counterfeiting is a crime. It's irrespective of whether it's committed by somebody in his basement or the Federal Reserve as a matter of public policy. It's a crime. That's at least the perspective that the Christians and constitutionalists have to have when we're addressing these matters of public policy. The biggest difference is that if it's a big enough crime, then it no longer matters as far as those in power are concerned, because the biggest crimes, of course, are those committed by those in the position of power, whereas a Bernie Madoff can go about impoverishing. It's amazing how many of the world's richest people, that's the part of the story that really gets interesting, is how many of these people are literally losing billions of dollars in this Ponzi scheme. He can do this on a scale that really is going to threaten the economic integrity of probably a couple of countries that are teetering on the brink here because of the amounts of money involved and the amount of leverage that is eventually involved in supporting this Ponzi scheme. And he's probably going to end up paying some kind of a horrendous price as a world historic private criminal. But even if you take a look at the fact that he was involved in probably what led to being scores of billions of dollars worth of fraud, that, of course, is just a drop in the proverbial ocean compared to what our government is doing, when just this last week it was confirmed that we have over $8.6 trillion in liabilities. That's the math that you and I have talked about for a couple of weeks, Dr. Stan. $8.6 trillion in liabilities that the Federal Reserve and Treasury Department have taken on in order to bail out the financial system of the United States.
But I think much of that has been within the last 3 months. That's what's
exactly incredible.
That includes, of course, the $700 billion that of course, were given to Henry Paulson to, of course, address the housing issue. And then he changed his mind and decided not to address the housing issue, but to give the money to his friends on Wall Street and the other banks and so that they could be liquid and so they could lend out. But, of course, they're not using the money to lend out because he forgot to tell them that when he gave them the money, he had to tell them what they were going to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the most incredible things. It's like Barney Frank when asked why didn't you stipulate in the TARP legislation, the Troubled Asset Relief Program, why didn't you stipulate that Henry Paulson had to use the money to bail out the housing industry? Bernie Frank said, oh, no, you can't make people do things. What do you mean you're going to give somebody $700 billion and you can't make people do things? Does anybody, does Barney Frank believe the American people are that stupid? And the truth of the matter is, he said it on 60 Minutes. I heard him say it. I've got the transcript of what he said. And the American people, where is anybody calling for the impeachment of Barney Frank?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they can't very well. He's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He's also a degenerate homosexual. He gives homosexuality a bad name, in my estimation. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I mean, there are some people who not only to personify a vice, but actually to make that vice even more disreputable. And it's Marty Frank's unique accomplishment, I think, that even though the practitioners of that vice, he has to be considered one of the most loathsome individuals who ever lived, if only because he's up to his neck wattles in such spectacular corruption, and he's come to embody in so many ways the arrogance of power that is one of the symptoms of a society in deep and precipitous decline. And I do think that it's interesting that these people become oh so scrupulous when it comes to compelling people who are part of the same political caste to do something that they might not be inclined to do. Of course, the only thing the government does is it compels and it forbids. Government is simply the exercise of force, and it's in the business of pushing people around, taking their property, and killing people. That's what government does. That's why government has to be carefully limited by law and committed to the sole and exclusive purpose of defending the rights of the innocent. And once it transgresses that limit, then it's simply in the business of rent-seeking, of renting out its power to the benefit of certain entrenched interests that tend to be organized at the expense of the general good, that is to say, at the expense of those of us who are seeking a society based upon the protection of individual rights and property. And what we have now, of course, is the prospect of a complete collapse of the financial system, which is badly overdue. I was just looking at this month's Atlantic, the Atlantic Monthly, which is, of course, one of the establishment journals that's very deeply involved in promoting a lot of what we complain about on this program. They have a fascinating interview with a fellow by the name of Gao Zhiqing. Gao Zhiqing is a member of the Chinese Politburo. As a matter of fact, he is one of the people who is most deeply involved in buying up American Treasury debt and also American commercial debt so as to keep our economy going. And the thing I find fascinating about this guy, he's about 53 years old. He's the president of the China Investment Corporation, CITIC, which became, of course, somewhat well-known and disreputable in this country during the Chinagate scandal of a decade ago when it was revealed that CITIC was involved in buying up the presidency of Bill Clinton through the targeted distribution of illegal campaign contributions in 92 and in 96. But he's the head of CITIC, which holds at least $200 billion. That's a relatively small figure, but it's a significant figure because of the way it's leveraged. $200 billion of the country's foreign assets, of our country's foreign assets, makes most of the high-visibility investments like buying stakes in Blackstone and Morgan Stanley as opposed to just holding treasury notes. Now, that's pretty interesting and significant fellow in terms of the larger financial architecture of the world. And I'm quoting off from James Fallows here in this article. He says, Gao, whom I mentioned in my article that he published about a year ago, would fit no American's pre-existing idea of a communist Chinese official. He speaks accented but fully colloquial and very high-speed English. He has a law degree from Duke, which he earned in the 1980s after working as a lawyer and professor in China, and he was an associate in Richard Nixon's former Wall Street firm. That's the part that really kills me.
Because that is a Rockefeller-controlled firm.
Exactly.
Just throw that in, right?
I mean, no, he didn't. But the point is that you see how incestuous this entire elite is when this guy is referred to in this article as one of the new Chinese banking overlords of the American economy. You take a look at his background. He was educated at Duke, and he worked in a Rockefeller-controlled law firm that used to employ Richard Nixon, who was supposedly the main enemy of communism, until, of course, he opened diplomatic relations with communist China in the early 1970s. And the way that he describes what's going on in the economy is actually very lucid and very scary, because he reflects on the same trends we talk about in terms of the apparent strengthening of the dollar being simply a reflection of the fact that everybody has to get liquid in order to pay the margin calls and to get involved in deleveraging their positions. They have to go out and they have to get dollars because these debts are denominated in dollars. That's artificially driven up the strength of the dollar, but he says the dollar's headed for a major collapse. And with that major collapse, there are going to be readjustments in the way that power is allocated in the world. And as a result of that, America is not going to be the dominant power anymore. You're going to have this shift of influence from the United States to probably a concert of nations involving China and Russia and some of the nations in Asia, Japan among them.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with William Gregg. Go right ahead.
Yeah, as Mr. Gao was talking, G-A-O, Gao, I believe is how you pronounce that name. What he's talking about here is the fact that there are going to have to be changes in the way the power is allocated in the world, and there's going to have to be some radical changes in the way that America treats other countries and other governments as a result of the unwinding of America's debt. And the other thing that I thought was really interesting in this profile, it's only two or three pages long, is where he's talking about the new system that's taken root here in the United States. Of course, you remember once again, Mr. Bush, just this last week or so, said something to the effect that he had to violate free market ideology in order to save the free market. You know, it's a little like destroying the village to save it, is the comment that many people have made when they've taken a look at that little conundrum. But what's happened, of course, is that we've abandoned any pretense of having a free market economy now. Suddenly, we're being told from both the Republicans and the Democrats, from supposed conservatives, even some libertarians like Stephen Chapman, who knows better, that really the only thing that can save us now is inflation. The government has to let the printing presses run, and it has to manage inflation in a way that will create these huge public expenditures that will lift the economy, that will somehow reignite the engines here of debt-fueled consumption, which is supposedly the only way that our economy can function.
And of course, what's going to happen is we're going to end up impoverishing our people. The cruelest tax of all is the inflation tax.
Exactly.
And they're talking about, of course, destroying the value of our dollar at least 90%. What does that mean to the people who've worked all their lives to accumulate wealth? It means they're going to lose most of it. That's what it's about.
Yeah, and that goes back to what Keynes talked about in terms of how, in the end, in the long run, we're all dead anyway. Well, no. You see, there are those of us who understand that if we have children, and Keynes never had children, he was of Barney Frank's persuasion. He played for the other team. He was a homosexual. He didn't understand, or probably understood, but had contempt for the attachment that people have to their children and their idea of posterity. I want to be able to save something in order for my children to have a better life. That's the way that it's supposed to operate. That's the covenant between children, or between parents and the children, you know, turning the hearts of the children to the fathers and the fathers to the children, as the Book of Malachi puts it. Well, you see, Keynes didn't understand that. In the end, we're all dead anyway. But if you have a high time preference, you want to spend the money right now, you have no scruples about stealing from your children. And so, of course, you want inflation. You want inflation in the sense that you want to be able to enjoy the immediate benefits of monetary inflation without the concomitant disadvantages of price inflation. We've had monetary inflation. We're going to get hit with price inflation. That's just the way it works. And that's all the result of having this fixation on immediate gratification, or to use the technical term again, a high time preference here economically. Now, what's going to happen, of course, is that as we end up with this huge outpouring, even huger outpouring of inflation, and we've seen how in the last quarter the Federal Reserve has been inflating at a rate that translates out to hundreds of percent a year. We don't know exactly how much, and people like the Chinese, the Japanese, the Saudis, the Russians are going to become less and less inclined to eat our inflation by subsidizing our debt. We're going to end up with this huge wave of hyperinflation that's going to wipe out everything and everybody. And what's happened, of course, is that we've abandoned any pretense here that it's the market that makes these decisions. We've now embraced the idea that it is the political caste exclusively.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, Dr. Stan, of course, William is just talking about how we've turned our back on the free market, and we're embracing the concept that we must have a financial elite who directs the course of our nation as they move us towards massive inflation. Now, right now, of course, we're in a deflationary spiral, and it will be there for some time. But down the line, with all the money they're pumping into the system, and over $8 to $9 trillion here so far this year, this is new money and credit that they put out. And now, of course, Obama is talking about another 800 billion to $1 trillion, and that's just the down payment, because, of course, that's what you put in initially, and then, of course, things get better for a while, and then they get worse, and you got to put in more money, and then it gets better for a while, and then it gets worse, you got to put in more money, and pretty soon you end up like Zimbabwe today, with an inflation rate of somewhere between 236 and 264 million percent a year. Go right ahead.
Well, what's happened, of course, is that, as I said, the political cast is entirely in charge now of making these decisions about the allocation of resources in this country. And that means, in principle and increasingly in practice, we live under a form of outright socialism. We've had a corporatist economy now for many decades. Much of our economy has always been corporatist, unfortunately. That's simply the reality of the human condition. People tend to prefer a corporatist or mercantilist type of a system. If they have the political influence to use, they'll use it. Adam Smith famously said that it's impossible for merchants to get together without plotting some conspiracy against the interests of the economy at large. They usually are looking for some way to use the government to shield them against competition, you know, create some kind of a cartel or some kind of a corporate monopoly in order to benefit themselves, mutually enrich themselves without necessarily passing on the benefits to the economy at large. But that's been limited within our system until very recently. And, of course, through the interventions by Woodrow Wilson and then FDR, we ended up with a thoroughly corporatized economy. That's never really changed, and now it's tending to morph into outright socialism. But it's socialism of a peculiar type now. And this is something that, once again, this communist Chinese Politburo member, Gao Zhiqing, who's the head of China Investment Corporation, has quoted in the December 2008 issue of The Atlantic, is pointing out, when he talks about the financial rescue plan, this is what he said about it. Finally, after months and months of struggling with your own ideology, with your own pride, your self-righteousness, finally the U.S. applied one of the great gifts of Americans, which is that you're pragmatic. Now, our people are joking that we look at the U.S. and we see socialism with American characteristics. Now, of course, what China is described, the Chinese economy, by its ruling class, it's described as having socialism with Chinese characteristics. They're approaching it from exactly the opposite direction. They're coming out of Maoist totalitarianism into a form of corporate socialism, where the princeling class, which would be roughly analogous to the economic financial insiders, masters of the universe here in the United States, they are the head of enterprises that are nominally private in the sense that they're owned privately, and they issue all kinds of investment instruments, and they market themselves as if they were private companies. But they are ultimately controlled by the Communist Party oligarchy, which is this, in this nation of 1.3 billion people, there are fewer, really, I think there are fewer than 3 million of the 1.3 billion people who are actual members of the Chinese Communist Party, and the Politburo itself is only 200 or 300 people. And so you've got basically an economy which is actually in the control of a very small handful of people, although these corporate entities are nominally private, ultimately they're politically controlled. They call this socialism with Chinese characteristics. You know, those of us who look at it a lot more cynically would say, well, it's fascism, basically, is what it is. And what, of course, the Chinese are saying is they take a look at what America's doing in the wake of the financial meltdown. They're saying, this is socialism with American characteristics. What they're doing is they're creating the same type of system. You've got the nationalization of the financial industry, the investment industry. You've got the nationalization, effective nationalization of the 10 largest banks. We've got the creeping and soon-to-be accelerating nationalization of the automobile industry, which is a huge, huge section of the economy. Mr. Obama and, of course, Hillary Clinton and those who are going to be part of his ruling elite overtly lust to socialize, to nationalize outright the healthcare industry. That's one-sixth of the economy right there. Actually, by the time we're finished, I think they'll be nationalizing everything up to and including the media. I don't think they're going to let the major media fall apart as the market would dictate right now. I really think we're going to end up with a fully nationalized newspaper or two. We're going to end up with fully nationalized television networks. I highly suspect that there'll be an effort to nationalize the Internet somehow. China has managed to do something of that sort, as has Iran. But these, of course, are all symptoms of this system that is being looked upon with a certain element of jocose self-satisfaction on the part of Mr. Gao and the others who are part of the Chinese Politburo. They see the United States going the same direction that China has been going. And in the same sense that this fellow, who was a communist professor in China...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. You were just saying that this fellow who was actually quoted in the Atlantic Monthly was a communist professor in China. Go right ahead.
He was a communist professor in China. Then he came over to the United States. He got a very high-profile blue-chip education there at Duke and went on to become an attorney there in that Rockefeller-controlled law firm. Then he went back to China to head up an investment bank for the Chinese government. In the same sense that you've got this kind of a fellow making that type of a career path, you've seen very similar things happening now in the United States where you're going to have a whole commissar class. They won't call themselves commissars. They'll call themselves czars. I mean, good heavens, we're hearing about czars being appointed for every conceivable purpose. They're talking about a car czar or an auto czar. And, of course, czar is the Slavic Russian cognate for Caesar, as Kaiser is a cognate for Caesar, and Shah. There are a number of others, and of course they all refer to people who are autocrats, and we don't really need czars in this country. I mean, the fault is not in our czars, but in ourselves, I suppose, that we're underlings. But the thing that really wipes me out here is that the language is becoming autocratic now, that we're hearing people talk about how the solution is always to have more government intervention, more unaccountable power, and a greater adulteration of the currency is a way to bring about true prosperity. And I mentioned Stephen Chapman. Stephen Chapman is a columnist for the Chicago Tribune. I suspect that if and when we see the media nationalized, that the Tribune would probably be folded into one of these big media organs that the government is going to have. Look, they have to have some kind of a controlled media apparatus in order to mobilize and mesmerize and indoctrinate the public. It's just simply too valuable of a tool to the ruling elite to let it disintegrate. And so I don't really think we're going to see the end of newspapers. We might see the medium shift into a different format. We might see them becoming more and more net involved and less dependent upon the pressed and folded dead tree product. But I don't think that the government's going to let these media enterprises simply fall apart. I think that they're going to consolidate several of the larger companies, the Tribune Company and perhaps the Boston Globe Company, Washington Post, New York Times, into two or three apparently competing but government-controlled and government-regulated entities as a way of making sure that this very important part of their control apparatus remains functioning. And Stephen Chapman writes the Chicago Tribune. He has a reputation somewhat earned reputation for being a libertarian, somebody who believes in limited government, somebody who believes in the Constitution.
Hold that thought, William. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William, of course, was just talking about a man named Stephen Chapman who works for the Chicago Tribune, who is supposedly a libertarian. But, William, before we go on, I would like you to get your webpage out and tell people how they can get the material that you're putting out on a regular basis.
Well, I appreciate that, Dr. Stan. The easiest way to find what I have to say is to go to willgrigg.com. And the reason why I suggest that particular address is because it's so easy to remember. WillGrigg.com is a shell website right now, but it's going to become more important because it's going to be updated and expanded with a lot more of the content of what I have written. But right now, the really good thing about the WillGrigg.com website is that it'll take you, if you look at the upper right-hand corner of the page, it'll take you to my daily or actually 3 to 5 times a week updated blog, Pro Libertate. Pro Libertate is the tentpole, really, of what I'm doing because the blogosphere is such an immediate and effective way of reaching people. And most of what I write for publications starts there, Pro Libertate. It's often republished at lewrockwell.com, and in some other outlets that you can find on the web. But Pro Libertate, as I mentioned, is a blog that is updated between 3 and 5 times a week as my schedule permits. And it's a little bit different from most blogs in that it's not intended to be an outlet for occasional, brief, somewhat superficial comments on what others are saying in the news. Most bloggers, and some of them are very, very good at this, will offer very brief observations, usually a paragraph or shorter, about things that they see happening in the news. They'll provide their readers with a great variety of other stories or links to other stories or brief excerpts from them. And I read a lot of those blogs. They're very, very useful. You can find blogs of that sort spanning the spectrum of political thought or going beyond politics and the things that are more substantive and more interesting. There are many, many blogs that way. The blogosphere is a wonderful thing. It really is the modern cyberspace equivalent in many ways of the type of environment that existed in the 18th century in the United States, where you had the pamphleteers and people who published broadsides and handbills. Everybody, it seemed, had a printing press, and everybody had an opinion. And in that yeasty ferment of opinion of the 18th century, we saw something wonderful take shape, and that was the political enlightenment that led to the American Revolution and American independence. And so the cyberspace, the blogosphere in particular, has that type of potential, I think. So I spend a lot of time focusing on Pro Libertate, but I write full-length opinion pieces that are usually seasoned with some hopefully plausible smattering of investigative journalism, which is to say, I don't simply vaticinate on a subject for 1,200 to 2,000 words. I try to find something unique to say about a subject by doing a little bit more spadework into a given subject than a lot of writers in the blogosphere might. That might involve, for instance, going out and doing some on-site reporting, which I've done for a number of my stories. It might involve getting on the telephone and starting to harangue people in the way that I used to when I worked for the New American. It might involve simply trying to get a hold of some reports or legal findings or legal rulings or other documents that require a little bit of an effort, a little bit of an investment of time to obtain and to research. But I think that if somebody's going to take the time to read what I have to say, that I really have the obligation of trying to get a little bit more deeply involved in the story and find out to the best of my knowledge, the best of the wisdom I've been given, what's going on and what this has to do with the fundamental question of politics, which is the preservation and expansion of individual liberty and human dignity. And so that's what Pro Libertate is about. Sounds a little pretentious, but that's what I'm trying to accomplish. And if you go to willgrig.com, if you go to Pro Libertate, you can also order my most recent book, Liberty in Eclipse, The War on Terror and the Rise of the Homeland Security State. That's also, of course, available through Radio Liberty or through Amazon.com. And that has to do with what I consider to be the most important development of the recent, the recent administration, which is the fully functional garrison state that we now are dealing with. It's becoming more and more obvious, more and more palpable, and over the next year, mark my words, write this down in ink, over the next year, that's going to play a very visible and tragic role in American life, because with the financial collapse underway and with the privations that are going to result, we're already being warned in the secular press, if you will, about the fact that we can expect to see direct military intervention in the United States in the name of propping up or securing public order. And this, of course, would be a dramatic, not unprecedented, but a dramatic thing in the context of American society. It's very, very rare that you would see a direct and overt military presence in law enforcement, but we're being told by sources that are plentiful and apparently respectable that we can anticipate this, if not this year, very, very soon. And that by 2011, no later, we can expect to see not one, but at least 3 and probably more fully armed and deployed military units attached to the Homeland Security Department here in the United States for the purpose of maintaining public order amid this huge international financial collapse that's undergoing, that we're going to be experiencing. And so purpose of the Liberty and Eclipse, which was published almost a year ago, was to explain how we got here and to foretell the future, because I do talk about those things in that book. And also to give some suggestions as to how we can back away from this precipice, because really it's very, very difficult once a society has succumbed to some kind of military rule for that society ever to recover its freedom. And there's a really sobering report from the U.S. Army War College that I cite in one of my recent postings on Pro Libertate. The posting is called Question 46 Revisited, and I'll talk about that perhaps in just a minute or two. But that report from the U.S. Army War College is talking about the notion that it may be necessary in the event that there is organized resistance to government, and there's going to be organized and perhaps even violent resistance to government if we're talking about the types of policies being brought to fruition that Mr. Obama is discussing, that would involve huge impositions on the liberty and the economic well-being of people in very, very bad economic times. There's going to be plenty of resistance, and I don't doubt some of it will catalyze into an active and potentially violent resistance. Well, in the event that the government meets that type of resistance, this War College paper says we're almost certainly going to have some kind of a military role in trying to suppress that type of active resistance. And the thing that the paper points out is that really there's no precedent for backing away from that type of a situation once you've got the military actively engaged in putting down dissent within a country. We really don't know how you get back from there to something resembling a constitutional republic. That would be terra incognita from an American constitutional point of view. So these are things that I'm talking about now in Pro Libertate. They're very important. They're very ominous. They're not pleasant to contemplate. They're less pleasant to discuss. But unfortunately, reality is not optional. And these are parts of the reality, very important parts of the reality that confront us right now. And so if people are interested in finding out what I have to say about these subjects, go to willgrigg.com. Look in the upper right-hand corner of that page. It will take you right to Pro Libertate. Get Liberty and Eclipse. And keep listening, of course, to Dr. Stan and Radio Liberty.
I appreciate the plug, but anyway, you were talking about Stephen Chapman before.
Yeah, Stephen Chapman.
I rudely interrupted you. Go right ahead.
No, it was not a rude interruption at all. It was a very productive one. But Stephen Chapman, as I said, writes for the Chicago Tribune. I really like a lot of what he has to say. But he recently published a piece that was republished on the Reason website. Reason is the flagship journal of the Cato Institute in Washington, D.C., which bills itself as a libertarian organization. I've got some really strong points of dispute with them about the worthiness of that organization to be called truly libertarian. Among them is the fact that they would publish an article of the sort. Stephen Chapman says that what we need right now is inflation in order to get out of the economic mess that we're in right now, that the government can somehow calibrate or target inflation in such a way that it will unfreeze the financial markets, so we'll get consumption flowing again, or actually get money flowing into the hands of consumers again. Consumers will consume. That will, of course, jumpstart the productive economy, and we're raring to go. You need to prime the pump with inflation. And then at some unspecified point, he said, we can back off. You know, the government can back off or can throttle down the inflation, and everything will be hunky-dory. Well, there are a number of problems with that analysis, the first of which, of course, is that he's endorsing fraud. He's endorsing fraud and theft. He's endorsing the theft of the value of what people have earned, what they have saved, what they have tried to invest. You're endorsing the idea that government can steal from these people through inflation and through fraud. Now, as I understand libertarianism, the only purposes for which government would be considered a suitable enterprise from a libertarian perspective are to protect the rights and property of individuals against force and fraud. Here you have Stephen Chapman endorsing the use of fraud in order to steal from people who have earned money and saved it, punishing people who are thrifty, punishing people who are deferring gratification, who are eschewing the temptations of the high time preference. He's endorsing the punishment of these people through the officially sanctioned form of counterfeiting and theft called inflation. And he actually acknowledges that. He says that's one of the downsides of this. The other problem, of course, is that we have a surfeit of inflation in this system already. He's talking about adding to an already huge existing pool of so-called liquidity, which is, of course, all fraudulently created money and credit that has been created by the Federal Reserve, the Treasury Department, They've been inflating giddily for decades. What he's talking about is simply enhancing the same problem that has led us to this predicament, the fact that we have a government that is in alliance with a quasi-private institution like the Federal Reserve that can counterfeit to its heart's content, assuming, of course, that it has a heart or an analog thereof. It can do so with impunity, and there's absolutely nobody who can that can exercise any kind of accountability over the way that they conduct their affairs or to audit the functions of this system that runs the world economy. You know, Stephen Chapman has no problem with this at all. And he has no problem at all with the idea of a centrally planned monetary system and a centrally directed economy here, because at some point, according to this formula, Mr. Chapman believes that there are these numinous, exalted beings who will know just how much inflation we can have, just how much theft and fraud we can inject into this system, and then they can start throttling down, because, of course, these people are nothing if not incorruptible. They throttle down.
But, of course, William, aren't these the same people who got us into the current mess?
Exactly.
They're so smart. Why did they get us into the current mess? And why did they really attack anybody who tried to let the American people know that we were heading into a disaster? People like Elliot Spitzer, you know. I don't really care for Mr. Spitzer's choice of prostitutes. But the reason, of course, that they came after him was because in February he wrote an article that appeared in the Washington Post that said, you know, this whole housing thing is a scam. Of course, it's going to destroy our financial system. And all of the 50 attorney generals of the 50 states are concerned about this and wanted to do something, and they were blocked by the Bush administration. And within 4 weeks, why, the FBI had his phones tapped, found out he was consorting with a prostitute, and put out a national, you know, press conference, you know, to discredit Elliot Spitzer. Why would they do that? Because he was involved with a prostitute? I mean, certainly, what about Barney Frank? Would they do that for Barney Frank, who's had a running a house to prostitution from his own home? Of course not. They wanted to get Mr. Spitzer because he was trying to tell the American people what was going to happen. And, of course, we weren't supposed to know until later this year. Everything's timed carefully. And, of course, Spitzer had to be destroyed because he told the truth. Mm-hmm. And I certainly don't excuse his consorting with a prostitute. But this is no business of the FBI.
Well, the interesting thing is to take a look at how easily corrupted and how corruptible and compromisable almost everybody in politics is. You've got to believe that in this system, blackmail plays a huge role, probably as big a role as it did in the Soviet system. I mean, in Russia, they still practice this, of course, in post-Soviet Russia, the practice called kompromat, where they create dossiers, detailed dossiers on everybody of consequence in the political system on the assumption that if somebody transgresses the limits of his proper role, if he goes beyond the length of his appropriate tether, then you can use whatever's in the file that would be damaging in order to destroy that person or at least to rein him in.
Everybody sounds like J. Edgar Hoover, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, exactly. But in the, you know, the Soviets were even better at it, and I think that what the people that are running our system now are even better at it than the Soviets. But just talking about Elliot Spitzer, I think that Mr. Blagojevich there in Illinois, Governor Blagojevich, got into trouble because he made some threatening noises about Bank of America. I believe that he was talking about trying to put pressure on Bank of America in order to provide some kind of financial help to that factory that had shut down and left a number of workers. They're protesting that basically occupied the plant, and they were demanding that they be paid what they had been promised to be paid. And Blagojevich, whatever you think of the prudence or wisdom, I don't think that there's necessarily any prudence or wisdom or justice in this, but he was talking about pressuring Bank of America, if I remember correctly. And within 48 hours, we have a federal prosecutor there going into the archives and digging out what the wiretaps had discovered about this guy putting up a Senate seat for bid.
And I wonder how many of our governors have wiretaps on their office phones and on their home phones.
I think he probably rounded up to all of them.
And in fact, there were not only the wiretaps, they had bugs in his office. I wonder how many of our governors have bugs in their offices and are being listened to on a regular basis, and I think it's rather frightening, but I suspect an awful lot of them.
Well, you know, it's interesting how in this interview with Mr. Gao from China, this GAO, Mr. Gao Jinping from China, he said that, quote, we have a PR department which collects all the comments about us. Now, the PR department, of course, was called the Public Security Bureau. It's the Chinese equivalent of the KGB. But he says they collect all the comments made about the Chinese leadership. Now, by all, I'm betting they mean all. He talks about newspapers. He talks about the web. I don't doubt for a second that the federal government in the United States has exactly the same capacity.
In fact, if you read William Odom's book, the General, yeah. Lieutenant General William Odom, the book is called Fixing Intelligence. He can't tell us what's going on. He headed the most important spy agency in the world, the NSA. But he could ask questions in the book, and he's a patriot, and he asked the question, should the Defense Department be collecting dossiers on American citizens? And I would simply ask the same question. Do you think that the Defense Department should be collecting dossiers on American citizens? The book was written in 2003, and I'm sure they've, of course, expanded that tremendously since then. Go right ahead.
Well, I do think that we underestimate the capacity of our rulers to have access to what we say, write, and otherwise express about them. We underestimate the capacity at our peril. But by the same token, I don't think that we should let ourselves be inhibited by the knowledge that everything that we say, every idle word that we say, every idle word that we commit to print or commit to an email is being collected somewhere. We might as well say what we think, because it does us no good simply to submit without putting up a fight.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Our guest, William Grigg. William, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up tonight's program.
Well, first of all, I want to stitch up a thread that I left dangling about 15 minutes ago. I promised to talk about this enigmatic proposition called Question 46. And if your listeners are interested, they need to go back to my blog, Pro Libertate, and look at the next-to-last installment. It's called Question 46 Revisited, and it talks about that notorious combat arms survey from 1994. At 29 Palms Marine Base in California. And this, of course, was something that was conducted as part of a master's thesis research project by a Navy lieutenant commander by the name of Guy Cunningham. Mr. Cunningham was not promoting the idea of turning the United States military over to the UN or using the military as a vehicle of gun confiscation here in the United States, but he asked a group of, I believe, 300 Marine veterans of foreign deployments about their attitudes concerning various policy options regarding turning over the military to the UN or using the military to confiscate civilian-owned firearms. He found that there were more than a quarter of them who would be perfectly willing, if ordered to do so, to fire on American citizens who resisted gun confiscation orders that were issued by the federal government. I think it was 26%. I would believe that the percentage would be much higher now because we have our military engaged in that kind of conduct everywhere it is deployed abroad, whether you're talking about Haiti or Somalia or Bosnia or Kosovo or Panama or Afghanistan or Iraq or anywhere else in the world. They're always involved in disarming people. And the reason I brought that up just recently is because it's entirely possible that as things grow tenser and more freighted here in the United States, we're going to be put into a position where people are going to have to be confronting this element of what our government intends eventually to do to us. So go back and take a look at that essay, Question 46 Revisited. But once again, to touch upon something I just said a minute or so ago, the fact that our government has these ominous and dreadful plans for us should not inhibit us as we're trying to do the right thing. We shouldn't allow them to define the terms on which we will live. We should not preemptively surrender. We shouldn't allow ourselves to live as if we've been conquered already. We should live as free men and free women, which means that we should do the right thing, we should obey God's law, we should do equity and do justice, and let the consequences follow. And in doing so, whether or not we end up in a situation that's even more dire than when we're in right now, at least we'll have the satisfaction of knowing that we have lived lives of integrity.
And somebody once said that, you know, a coward dies 1,000 deaths, but a brave man dies but once.
Amen.
We're out of time. William, it's always a pleasure, and we'll look forward to having you with us again next week.
Thanks, Dr. Stan.
And
God bless.
And thank you so much, and thank you for all that you do. Good night. God bless you. And we'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the program. Well, this is Dr. Stan. If you would like, of course, to get the copy of the program, we do talk during the breaks, and they're available by calling either CDs or tapes, calling 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get William's book, Liberty and Eclipse, or my talk on the planned police state, and then the syllabus that goes with that, which is very important because it contains the writings of the occultists, of the people from the demonic organizations, truly demonic organizations that are out there, and we simply quote from what they say, and from the writings of a demon who actually channeled her material through a woman named Alice Bailey 50 years ago, and they talk about the times that are coming to pass today. Understand that everything is being planned. They are following a plan. They have a plan. The people from the dark side have a plan. The liberals have a plan. The people in the Trilateral Commission has a plan. And God has a plan. And if you'd like to know about God's plan, let me suggest Billy Crone's excellent DVDs, The Final Countdown. There are 10 of them in two parts, part one and part two. Excellent teaching material for you, your family, and your friends, The Final Countdown. And then, of course, we have his DVDs on creation. There are 10 of them in two parts, part one and part two. And then, of course, we have his one set of four DVDs on RFID chip identification. Ladies and gentlemen, everything is in place to have everybody identified so they can be tracked, and you'll be either buying or selling. Unless, of course, you utilize the mark. We have the book Spy Tips by Catherine Albrecht. We have, of course, a four-tape set on the spy tips. The plan that everybody will be monitored. These things aren't happening by accident. They're happening by intent. All of them are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV. War. And then, of course, we certainly hope you'll get our book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and you'll certainly want to get extra copies at a reduced price and reduced cost and get those out. You can actually either get copies of our DVD and copy it, or you can watch it up there on our internet site at RadioLiberty.com. The Brotherhood of Darkness will give you an overview of what's going on. You can also see our DVD up there. So many of our other DVDs. What I really suggest, and apparently it's right up on the internet, it's on YouTube, and you can just Google in the Forbidden Secret. The Forbidden Secret, you can watch it there. Of course, you can get the original from us and copy it and get it out. There's a syllabus that goes with that. There is a Forbidden Secret that's been passed down for 5,000 years. And we want you to know what that secret is, because we'll help you to begin making preparations for what lies ahead. We'll help you educate others. How can we convince people that there really is a problem, that there really are dark and sinister spiritual forces out there? Well, they hide their emblems in plain sight. They hide them all over Washington, D.C. You can see them in the DVD, Riddles in Stone, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital. You can see them on the back of the dollar bill. What is the triangle with the glorified eye in it? It's a symbol of the ancient mystery religions. So what is it doing on the back of the dollar bill? What is the pyramid doing there? They probably, heard that's a Christian symbol. No, it's not. It's a symbol of the ancient mysteries, and believe me, they've been around for 5,000 years. That's why my talk on the Forbidden Secret is so important. But you